I'm Delta Work, and this is Very Delta. Today on the show, we have my mentor and icon, Fantasia Lamour. We talk about sliding some skin and putting a dime in the jukebox. But first, do you want to see me go off? Because I think you want to see me go off.
M.
Oh.
M.
Mom!
Are you a lady like me? Introspective, beautiful. Are you intellectual like me? Beguiled by a bargain? You like wild times? Like me? Are you serving the community like me? Well, if you are, then you must be Very Delta.
I'm Delta Work, and this is Very Delta, a luxury public access podcast and YouTube talk show where I look gorgeous, speak extemporaneously, and invite fascinating people to sit on the couch and get Very Delta. Very Delta is for the woman who knows you can't catch it just from using a homosexual's mug. But first, let's get into some things that are very Delta. I have this very distinct memory, and it's not that long ago when my mom said, "Ooh, I remember when payday bars used to be so much bigger." And I thought to myself, the payday bar is like I always remember. It's just a bar with some sort of caramel nuts pressed on the outside. It looks like the payday bar I've always known. And she's like, "No, trust me, it used to be much bigger. It used to have way more peanuts." And so I just kind of took it at that, and I thought like, "Oh, whatever, you know, parents are always going to talk about when I was a kid." And then the other day, I had a payday bar. And I was like, I remember when payday bars used to taste so different. And I remember when they used to be so much bigger. And then about a week later, I had a Twinkie. And I thought, what happened to Twinkies? They used to be so soft and have so much vanilla in them. And they used to taste so sweet and so spongy. And there was so much cream in them. And I had this thing and I seriously took a bite and it didn't squish down, right? It didn't like pull. It like broke off and popped. It wasn't a sponge cake. There wasn't all kinds of nice creamy vanilla. There was none of that. It still had the same color. It still looked the same. The packaging was what I remembered. But I just thought to myself, how is this delicious? Like, how is this good? Someone I was with had a Zinger, those red ones with the coconut on the outside. I tasted that. It tasted like if a Barbie foot became food. It was so wrong. And I thought to myself, what happened to snack food? Like, what happened to all of these things that, I mean, not me, but other people would eat them and then go, oh, this is so bad for me. You know, I don't give a shit. I know it's bad for me. I'm still going to eat it. But I thought to myself, what happened to this stuff? And then I went back and I realized, you know, everywhere we go, everything's more expensive. I get it. My mom says to me sometimes, oh, I remember when we used to get penny candies. You would go to the store and you would get penny candies. And then I thought, what do I remember as a kid? Well, I can remember when I was a kid and my mom smoked at the time. And she would write a note that would say like, Gabriel can pick up a pack of cigarettes for me, Margaret from the apartment building. And I would go over to the little liquor store and I would say, I have a note. And I can remember that cigarettes were like $2.73 a pack. The last time I was in New York, and this was many years ago, I remember somebody saying that a pack of cigarettes was $14 there. And around $10 here. It just blows my mind because I never thought that quickly I would be in this sort of space where I'm looking back on stuff going, I remember when I was a kid, but I'm literally there. I'm literally there. I feel like once upon a time, you could go to McDonald's or any fast food place with a $20 bill and four people could eat there. That's not the case anymore. You take three people through, and it's going to be at least $45, at least. And listen, I'm not talking about just heavy hitters either. I'm talking about anybody that wants a combo. It is going to be $10 without upsizing the combo. And this idea of shrinkflation is what I'm talking about too, because I feel like with shrinkflation, recipes are changing, flavors are changing, not just the cost of things, of the new price and what you get. There was, I'm going to actually look at this piece of paper here. The fast food price increase, inflation from 2014 to 2024. And these are facts pulled directly from Finance Buzz. From 2014 to 2024, McDonald's prices have increased 100%. Popeyes, 86%, Taco Bell, 81%, Chipotle, 75%, Wendy's, 55%, Subway, 39%. And with that, we see the amount of food change. I remember the first part of this was when McDonald's decided that documentary came out. We've talked about it before. They said like, oh, our food's unhealthy for people. We want to offer options for people. And I think that was a way in of saying like, well, we're going to reduce our sizes, but we're going to increase the cost because we have to pay our employees a living wage, which you should be doing. And you shouldn't be passing that cost off to your customers. I think you should be paying a living wage to your employees, but you should not pass that cost off to the customers at such a detrimental amount. You know what I'm saying? I mean, why can't some of these CEOs and everyone else take a little bit of this hit? Maybe they are in some way for them, but I don't think as significant as it is for us. I remember talking just recently about going to Carl's Jr. and their large soft drink is now dropped about 10 ounces in size, and it has stayed the same price. So what used to be $3.39 for about 40 ounces is now the same price, being called a large. So they just move the medium up in that way, and they still charge you the large price. This is happening everywhere. It's happening with cake mixes. Cake mixes have gone from, I don't know, 15 ounces for a box of cake mix, all the way down to like 13 ounces for some brands, Betty Crocker, Duncan Hines. I don't know the exact ones, but it is significantly there and it's significantly different. So what happens in my mind is if you're changing the dry ingredients, but not changing the instructions on the wet ingredients, the taste of the food is going to change. So I'm going to make that cake and I'm going to go, wow, when I was a kid, this cake sure tasted a lot fluffier. Not even when I was a kid. When I was 45, the cake tasted a little fluffier. I'm 48, and now it seems just like a little more dense. Why is that? Well, because they took some of those dry ingredients out, and they're not telling you to compensate in any way. Like, hey, maybe buy two cake mixes, which are not that expensive to begin with. But get those two cake mixes and pour some of that cake mix into the other one and then use those wet ingredients and you're going to remember that flavor. The flavors change. I had Pringles the other day. What happened to Pringles? Pringles used to be so fucking good. Pringles were that original chip, kind of like a Dorito, where you would like fish around and there would be some that had so much color powder on them that you would lick it off and you would go, ooh, I could taste the cheddar cheese on this. I could taste the sour cream and cheese. Now you look at those Pringles, which have gone down in can size from like here to here, right? So about that much chips is gone. And some people go, oh, it's better for you. Stop looking at the bright side. I want to look at the real side. You're cheating people out of the product. Wasn't so long ago, even bacon was down to like 9 ounces, or we're selling a 12 ounce package of bacon that looks just like the pound of bacon, that little piece is off of there. And you don't think about it because you're like, I've always grabbed bacon. This is just what bacon is, but it's different. Subway tries to do it as well. They try to rework their menu and call it like power sizing and size it this way and size it that way. Why is it at Subway you can make any sandwich into a salad, but it's not cheaper? You don't get the bread. So you don't get that full piece of bread. You can change the sandwich to a salad, and they still put the same amount of ingredients because, you know, you can put whatever you want there. All the vegetables are free. So if you want to load it up, you can load it up. So if you load it into a bowl and when you want, listen, the sandwich artists apparently are also, I don't know, salad decorators as well. And they go in there and they make the salad. And I feel like when you go into making something at a restaurant, you would make it according to policy. And if you haven't been given the policy, you would make it according to the way that you would make it for yourself. So maybe these people just don't eat salads or something because they sprinkle the lettuce in like this. Maybe I don't want to see the bowl. I don't want to see the ridges on the bowl. I don't want to see the design. I want all that covered up with spinach and lettuce. And then I want to put my stuff in. But here's what I think I should start doing. Maybe I should just start asking for the sandwich made as a salad and tell them, no, I know what I'll do. I don't want my sandwich made as a salad. I want my sandwich made with my bread on the side. That way I can get all, and if they can't give me a container, that's fine. Put it in the wax paper. And then when I get home, I'll go like this and I'll sprinkle it into a bowl and I'll go like this. And girl, they're so stingy on those. They don't even have croutons. They only have saltine crackers by Zesta. Don't play with me. I want croutons. So I'll put my own croutons and then I'll get that bread and I'll just tear the bread off and eat it like this. You see how I eat it? Like that. That's how I want it. Is my earring falling off? You knew I was going to find a reason for these earrings. Anyway, the shrinkflation is fucking crazy. I know I'm not crazy. I know when my mom said to me back in the day, oh, the candy bars used to be bigger. The Twinkies used to be softer. The this, the that. And I thought, well, how come no more people were talking about it? They weren't talking about it because there was no social media. They weren't going to, what were they going to do? Like send it, like call one another and go, let's get a party line going about this. They just let it go. Cause there was like, I don't know, houses were $100,000. They weren't bitching about it. Now everything is so expensive and the country's falling apart and fucking Red Lobster is going out of business because people ate too much, all you can eat $20 shrimp. I don't know. I'm not crazy. And my mother wasn't crazy either. I just never thought I would get to the point where I'm like, back in my day, it wasn't that long ago. It really was not. My day was not that long ago. It's just that I'm the first part of this generation, right? That is now using social media, but was also around when there was no social media and realizes what those people were talking about to one another wasn't talking crazy to one another. They just didn't have an outlet to say these things. Now we do, and we can hear each other and listen to each other and go, you know what? I noticed that too. And now we're all aware at the same time and we all have the same platform. All we have to do is turn on our phone and go, did you notice this? Yes, I did. And then we tell each other and then we realize, oh my God, we're getting fucked over. This time 20 years ago, houses were $300,000 less than they are now. But the salaries have only gone up about, I don't know, $1,000 to $3,000. Houses were $300,000 cheaper 20 years ago. Where's everybody supposed to live? They say, you know what they say? Oh, cook at home. It's cheaper. No, it's not. How is it cheaper? I mean, yeah, if you eat a bologna sandwich at home, of course it's cheaper. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to get as many STDs if you don't have sex, but we're going to have sex. Well, don't wear perfume. Just be natural. Okay, well, if that works for you, but I want to wear perfume. That doesn't really go together, but it's still a thing. You know what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying. Do you want to see me take a break? Because I think you want to see me take a break. I want to take a break. Do you know what's very Delta? Factor. Factor makes eating better so easy with their delicious ready-to-eat meals. These meals only take 2 minutes to heat up and are perfect for my busy schedule. Not only is the food delicious, but I've saved so much money by using Factor. These meals are less expensive than takeout and are curated by chefs to be restaurant quality. With over 35 options to choose from every week, I find myself trying new things and discovering new food combinations that I absolutely love. This week, I indulged in the cheesy chicken and broccoli casserole with brown jasmine rice. And let me tell you, the casserole is comfort food at its finest. A sprinkle of gooey cheese tops off this hearty meal and totally sends me every time I eat it. Head to factormeals.com/VeryDelta50 and use code VeryDelta50 to get 50% off. That's code VeryDelta50 at factormeals.com/VeryDelta50 to get 50% off. Curious about how you can achieve smooth, natural-looking, long-lasting filler results?
The Juvederm collection of fillers has 6 unique gel fillers that add subtle volume and are designed for different needs and specific areas of the face, like lips, cheeks, chin, smile lines, under eyes, and jawline. Ask your licensed specialist for a full face assessment today and download the Allie app. That's A-L-L-E, the official loyalty program of Juvederm, to save on treatments and to get a look that's true to you. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's J-U-V-E-D-E-R-M.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Juvederm.com. Our guest today is an entertainment icon. Her first name ain't Fantasia. It's Fuddy. Fuddy Lou, if you're nasty. It's Fantasia Lamour.
Hi, Delta.
Hi, I'm so glad you're here.
You're the only person that calls me Fuddy Lou.
Yeah, I feel like not only that, but like I feel like I always seem to add something onto your name because sometimes I'm like Fuddy Diane, Fuddy Louise, Fuddy. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing.
Fuddy Lou. That's new.
Yeah. That's the way it goes. But people, you know you for Fuddy Fashions, and I think they're not aware. They're like, why, what is Fuddy? I mean, I see this glamorous woman who's a style icon. What does Fuddy mean? And they don't get it.
It's a lot of, you know, the funny thing is the first, 15, 20 years of my career, it was Fantasia, 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 Fantasia. But now with social media, you remember back in the day when you had to change your legal name. My legal name is Fuddy Fantasia Lewis.
Right.
And I had it legally changed in 2001 and I added the Fantasia to it. Mm-hmm. So people know me from, as far as my family, back home in Indiana, everybody knows Fantasia. Very few people know Fuddy. Right. So now that everybody knows my real name, some people are starting to call me Fuddy. Mm-hmm. And I never did used to get that.
Yeah, totally. I feel like you are one of the first people that I ever knew in doing drag shows who performed as a drag entertainer, but also worked professionally in costume and wardrobe design. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say like, oh, I make costumes, but I don't think you just make costumes. You make wardrobe, you make red carpet. Tell us about that.
Well, I was very fortunate to work a little over 8 years on and off for a fashion designer in Woodland Hills by the name of Linda Stokes. Mm-hmm. And that was an opportunity that I had that gave me a lot of chances to work for a lot of, big name celebrities. But at the end of the day, I'm working for her. I'm just one of the seamstresses there. But to know that I would be like, I would ask her, I'd say, who is this for? She, that's for Patty. I'd say, who is this for? Oh, that's for J-Lo. I'm like, I'm actually putting a stitch on something for this celebrity. So working with her and working around so many different skilled professional tailors that do this for a profession, I was always learning because I never went to school for it. Mm-hmm. I was just self-taught. So working with her just helped me to enhance what I already knew.
I think, one of my very first professional Adele dresses is a dress that you made for me. And I still have that dress. And I learned from you something really important. And that is that if it is simple, if you're wearing mm-hmm. something that people think is, oh, that's just a simple black dress, it has to be tailored just so and to let your body come through. And how do you highlight best? What's your best feature? And that's why I keep that dress because it's so important to me. Like when Adam and Chad made in Rhinestone the Cher costume, mm-hmm. whether I wear it anymore or not, it's just so important to me. These are things that I keep forever. And that's something that you as someone who loves fashion, I feel like you also have an eye for just style in general. You can style something so simple. Where does that come from?
You know, I'm about to crack your face because I'm really not, and maybe this is me downplaying myself, I'm really not the greatest fashion designer. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that I do are people that have their own concepts, say, can you make this for me? And I'll look at it and I'll figure out, how I can make it. And it's still also a learning process. But as far as coming up with ideas and a great variety of ideas, a lot of my stuff is very simplistic and a lot of the same, but just a different twist to it. Like this dress right here, I made this dress a million times and just changed the sleeve or changed the silhouette of the bottom and added another panel. So nothing just completely different all the time, because I work better off of other people's ideas that they give me, and I just try my best to duplicate it or get close to it.
Right. Well, I mean, this is really kind of like the same idea with the with RuPaul, like, you know, or someone like Bianca Del Rio, who says, like, people go on her season, oh, the same dress. But if you know it works for your body.
Right.
And you're trying to create sort of a branded look where you say, this is how I showcase best, so I can change up the sleeve or this or that. And that's why I say, like, the dress that you made for me, it was like, you took the time to look at it and go, it is simple. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have this fabric speak, and we're going to cut it in such a way that it just showcases you right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it feels good. And I also always watch you when someone in a dressing room will make something. You'll have a conversation with them. How did you do that? How did you make that? I love seeing that dialogue.
I'm being inquisitive because I'm learning. I've been sewing since my sophomore year in high school.
Wow.
And from that time until now, I'm still learning things, always learning things. Because like I said, I never went to school for it. I attempted to go to a tailoring school years ago in the 80s in South Bend, Indiana. It was he was a European tailor. And I went to school for like a week and I quit.
Really?
Because he was so meticulous. He was so to perfection. I was ready to sew. The first week that I took classes with him, it was all about sitting and your posture. It's like, when are we going to sew? It's like, I'm ready to sew. And I ended up quitting. And I regret that to this day, because I would have been able to enhance my skills even more. Mm-hmm. But we all learn by our experiences.
Do you ever have people that are that'll say, oh, you know how to sew. Why don't you hem these pants for me? Why don't you fix this for me? I see people that do that, like with Davey. Mm-hmm. They'll say that to him. And he's like, I got to tell you. Like I've even said to him, oh, I got a new pants for whatever. We're going to somebody's wedding. Will you hem these for me? And he's like, you know what? I could do it, but I'm not the greatest tailor. And tailoring and sewing a stretch dress are two different things. He's like, they're different theories. I never went to school for that.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons why I really don't do a lot of men's suits. You know, I can take a pattern of a suit, and this is not a store-bought pattern. When I say pattern, I mean going to like a thrift store or a Goodwill and getting a man's double-breasted jacket, taking it apart and utilizing that as a pattern. That's how I do patterns.
Right.
But I don't prefer to do men's clothing as far as suits, because it does involve a whole lot of detail and tailoring and the important things that other people take for granted that they think they're not supposed to do.
Right.
You know, the interfacing, the stitching, the inside work of a man's suit would really, really gag you. When you take it apart, you'll see and you'll know.
Yeah, there's so many pieces to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you screw up one piece and you're like, oh, it's still half an inch this way, everything has to come back apart. It's just, its own thing. That's why you have to go to somebody who
knows what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I feel like with Drag Race and Dragula and social media, everyone, a lot of people get these opportunities to do stuff with celebrities and be in videos. But there's a lot of people who have done those things, but because social media wasn't as strong as it is now, not everybody remembers, and they don't think to Google it, that there were a lot of people who put those footprints down before other people did. And it's exciting to go back and go, wait, is that so-and-so that I'm looking at? A lot of things, like someone like Kelly Mantle or Willem, even before Drag Race, but yourself as well.
Yeah.
You know, Beyonce runs the world, as we know. But you were very much a part of Beyonce's early career.
Yeah, I was a feature, I guess you would call it a feature model in Bills.
Right.
Which was an opportunity I was just granted in my hand the day of. I got a call from Jasmine.
Uh-huh.
And apparently she was unable to do it. And it was a very, very last minute thing. And now, don't quote me on this, but I heard that it was offered to RuPaul.
Okay.
And RuPaul contacted Jasmine. Jasmine's like, oh, I know somebody. So they called me. And they needed somebody camera ready. If you really pay attention to that video, my part didn't make no sense. As a professional director, when you look at that video, Bills, and you really analyze and dissect it, you'd be like, this don't work with this.
But you were in there.
I was in there and I enjoyed it. But after the fact, when I look back, I was like, you know what? They're right. It really doesn't fit. But there was a whole lot more that I did. But, you know, with editing, a lot of it was taken out.
Right.
So it ended up being just a short clip cameo. So I'm very, very proud of it.
Yeah, it was fierce. But also, I remember Sparks because I remember a time when TV, there were so many great comedy shows. There were so many great shows that maybe only lasted a couple of seasons that people go, oh, remember this? Mm-hmm. But you had to be there at that time to remember those shows.
Yeah.
But Sparks was sickening. That was a really, really sickening role. What was the difference between being like in the music video versus being in a TV show?
Oh, my goodness. The difference in being in the TV show is like, I had to go to table readings. It was a guest starring role.
Right.
It was not a one-liner. I was not one of those girls that, oh, she was in that movie, but you got to pause and rewind to catch her in it.
Right.
I was up in it. And I was so, so proud of that particular moment because it was someplace that I've always had fantasized about. Now here I am in a show with Terrence Howard, Miguel Nunez, Kim Whitley, Robin Givens, and I'm the guest starring role. It was amazing.
Yeah. I love, and I think about, you know, we've had other people here that have done a multitude of things that not everybody that's being celebrated right now on social media has done. And they did them before or really without social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about the fact that not only are you an entertainer in shows, but you're also a multi-crown holding title holding pageant winner, pageant participant, pageant supporter, pageant promoter. You've also been, again, into television shows and music videos that had nothing to do with having a national platform.
Mm-hmm.
They just had to do with what most people had once upon a time, which was a recommendation from somebody who was just as good. And you have this depth to you that people who know you as somebody who's very glamorous and very elegant and on time and professional don't realize that there's so much that leads up to that.
It is.
Right?
It's a whole lot. I owe so much to the pageant arena for my career. I think, and I'm just guessing, maybe anywhere between 25 to 27 years of just pageantry for me. And that was the bulk of the beginning of my career in this industry. You know, we all started off in that one show, you remember that one show that we did, and we won the contest.
Right, right.
And we got bit by the drag bug and all of a sudden done that too.
Right.
But the biggest part of my career was really, really evolved around the whole pageant arena. And for the most part, it was evolved around the continental pageantry system. And then I branched off into other things. I've been fortunate to be a part of the Westland pageantry system and reigning right now as Glamorous Legends, which is a new division of glamorous pageantry that they just added. So a multitude of things that are under my belt in the world of pageantry, I just owe my whole career to that.
I love that. I love that. Let's take a break.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The movies are back, baby, and if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Ys. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint. The name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Ys. Movies, Baby!
We are back with Fantasia Lamour. We are talking about pageantry. And let me, I got to tell you, sometimes we will be off on commercial and I'll still rattle shit off. So you're into pageantry, we'll say 3 decades. I mean, it is 3 decades, well into 3 decades. How do you think the face of pageantry has changed? Does it just change within its own pageant, or is there something that happens to the whole systems across the board?
Oh, that's a very difficult question to answer because there's so many pageants. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that there is a handful of pageants that have a great reputation, that have been around for a long time and that are considered national. But, you know, it's just so many of them. And I don't think much has changed other than the participants and the contestants evolving themselves.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, when I first started working with Dreamgirls, it was like early 2000, 2001, something like that. And of course, you had been there for years and years. How long have you worked with Dreamgirls?
So officially, let me say this out loud, especially to Chad Michaels, that I've been with the Dreamgirls since 1996.
Wow. You still actively, obviously, are a full-time cast member of Dreamgirls.
Yes.
Participate in
yes,
all of the shows. How do you think that's changed with the social media and with just different people coming in? And
I like the recognition that is getting now. And the platforms that it's on, I think it's extremely important. Like, for example, now Dreamgirls has an Instagram.
Right.
So that's what's really, really helping it to grow even more. But the popularity of it just stands on its own. It was the longest running drag show in Southern California for years. And to be a right. part of that, it's like, you the shit if you're a Dreamgirl.
Right.
It's just as simple as that.
Yeah.
Loving it.
It's so interesting because there's people that, and what we're talking about is the Dreamgirls Review in Southern California, which was established, I don't know, I'm going to say maybe early 90s. And this is a show that had all of its original cast members. And then the cast has changed as people have moved away or people have moved to town. And it's really gotten, I feel like every year it gets its legs even bigger and stronger because we're able to be different places.
Right.
And I can remember when I first started doing Dreamgirls, was at Ripples. And I remember I was so nervous. And then one day Chad was just like, you could come in, you could do something. And girl, I had maybe 3 wigs. I didn't have anything. But he said, like, he just thought, like, there's something that we could do with you. There's something that can happen here. You seem like you're really into this. And I can just remember at that time, all of my mentors at that time, and still to this day, are you, LaDonna, Chad Michaels, Marilyn, Hunter, and many of those people, Kiwi, are not with us anymore because there was a chunk of time at Dreamgirls where we lost a lot of people very consistently, very fast, very tragically.
Yeah.
And it's part of our Dreamgirl history that is such a sad, sad time, especially considering how powerful all of those people were. And I can remember when Marilyn left was around the time when I was just coming in, and I remember people saying, she's not Marilyn, she'll never be Marilyn. And I remember thinking they had such a love for her, and I thought, I'm never going to replace her. That's not what I'm here for. They're just bringing me up in here because they know that we're going to keep strengthening everybody. Everyone's got to get a chance in here. So it's so rich. And like, even though, you know, I'm too fucking lazy to get in my car and drive all the way to San Diego because I'm a old biddy, but I always feel as I'm part of the Dreamgirls, I'll always be part of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's such a place. And my icons were those people that let me grow and let me have gain my legs. I'm so happy that now that I'm into the third decade of doing this kind of thing, that I can look back and like, we can be in this space. And I can say, and I've always said, Fantasia's not just a glamour icon, like she's an icon of teaching people professionalism. And that's just what you do. And I don't know, I feel like as I get older, it's like something I appreciate even more because there's people that I don't get to see as much, you know? Ooh, I feel like I'm getting verklempt a little bit. But I just feel that way, you know? And as I watch all of our friends grow and succeed, I just hope it's always like that. And the world is so weird right now. It's so scary. And there's so many things against drag and things against trans people. And, you know, I feel like I wish people understood, even in our own community, that trans and being a woman is who you are. But doing drag shows is your profession.
Exactly.
It's a different thing.
And one of the things that bothers me sometimes is the fact that there's so much drag out here, and there's so much drag that's working and being booked, but they're being booked because it's a hobby, not because it's your career. This is a career for me. This is what I do for a living. And to see that I'm on a stage with somebody that does it as a hobby, and you've been doing drag for 2 days, and I'm doing a curtain call with you. It's not me being some type of way, but I just hate the fact that so many people are praised just because it's your good Judy. Mm-hmm. But we work hard with what we do, and right. we put so much into it, and we should be appreciated and celebrated individually and exclusively as professional entertainers, those who take the time to get their nails done and wear their hair right and make sure that your shoes are not scuffed and you don't have no raw edges on your costumes and things of that nature. Any Tom, Dick, or Harper that walks into a show and sees a full show, they're going to know which one the professionals are. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that need to be working more often.
Yeah. No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, we've had to come to the point where we joke about certain things where we're like, oh, this one's still doing this or that, or this or that. And yeah, you may have a number that just kills it. So that's just the number you're going to do all the time. But if that's the case, keep that number polished up.
Yeah.
It's simple. If you're making money off of something, at some point you have to put back into it and say...
No safety pins.
Right. And if it is going to be a black safety, if it's going to be a black dress, put a black safety pin on it.
You know, no, put a black safety pin on it. But after the show, go home and sew it up. Fix
it. This is what I'm talking about.
Fix it.
This is what I'm talking about. It's true, though. It is true. And that's why I say when I'm around people, like I just, you know, I get it. We're in a new time in a new place where we say all drag is valid and all, you know, and I've said before, it may be all valid, but it's not all bookable and or shouldn't be until it's gotten to some point. But I like the idea of being around people who have been doing it longer than me mm-hmm. and listening to their advice. And I think those people, especially those that are your mentors or who are close to you, I think it is their place to say to someone, hey, I know you shining better than this. I know you. I think you should know that if I see it, they see it.
Exactly.
And I think that there's nothing wrong with your drag aunties or your drag uncles or whoever it is in your drag family, even if it's not announced and it's not a shared name. I think it is absolutely your place to revere what they have to say.
Exactly.
That's me. I'm not saying everybody has to live their life a certain way.
But see, that's one of the things that helped me with that you're talking about through pageantry. Because in pageantry versus a show, you're being judged and you know that you're being judged. Yeah. And I always think about this person because she told me, Tommy Ross.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
when I tell you, she's one of my favorites, one of many of my favorites. She told me one day, she said, Fantasia, listen, if you put it on, you're putting it on for me to judge you. And that has always stuck with me. So when I put it on and I look in the mirror, if I see a thread hanging, if I see a flaw, I'm not going to try to hide it with this hand. I'm opposed. No, change it. You got to fix it because now you are being judged on it versus, you know, I'm just going to go do brunch. Not that you shouldn't be perfectionist, but when you keep that in mind in everything that you do, you're always being judged. The camera's going to catch everything. I'm sure you zoom in on photos a lot,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a funny story that not a lot of people know. But I feel like everybody should know.
Okay.
I don't know if the place is in South Bend, but okay. I know you're from South Bend.
Yes.
But there was a place that you performed at before, at least once, maybe many times, mm-hmm. where there wasn't exactly a DJ.
Oh! I can't... Oh, what was the name of that place? Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Regardless of...
It was in Mishawaka.
Okay.
It was in Mishawaka, Indiana. Oh my goodness.
So if there was no DJ, how would you select your music?
The jukebox. The show director and the host, may he rest in peace, his name was Bradley. And I remember he booked me in the show. I was, you know, visiting home in town. And I was like, well, where do I mean? Oh, girl, we just use a jukebox. I said, what do you mean a jukebox? She said, girl, we put a quarter in and pick a song.
So they
They put a quarter in the jukebox, pick the song, and that's the song that you do.
Damn. So you were really limited on what you could. I mean, you
yes,
got
it. But I did it because I was in town. I was a guest.
Love it.
I was in town and I was a guest, and I was not going to say no because it's important that you always remember where you came from. You can't. I mean, I could have been like this diva. Oh no, I'm not finna do no show. Jukebox Girl. No, I did the show and they did not pay me, but I was at home and I knew that this was a gig that he had started. They had a low budget. It was like paying the girls $20 or $25. I said, yeah, I'll come and do it. He was like elated. The club was packed that night and we
That's
had a
so
wonderful
cool.
time picking songs on the jukebox. But the funniest time for me was hearing that quarter fall.
Right.
I loved it. Yeah.
I love that. Well, you know, and it kind of goes back to that thing where a lot of times people will say, people that don't maybe have not been around drag entertainers or dressing rooms, they'll say, oh, this might not be good for you. Or you maybe you're used to better than this. And Vanity Halston used to say this thing all the time. Girl, I'm not above it, so I'll get below it. Because the reality is, yeah, I've gotten ready in plenty of alleys because I like to work.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what it is, that's what it is. Some places would say, and it means the world when they're like, if we had more, we would give you more. And I know that. I know that they would. But there are places that will take advantage. You know what
Baby,
I mean? There's just so many situations.
I'm not going to name this place.
But.
I'm not going to name this place, but I'm going to say it was in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
And baby, when I tell you, that was the one place that I was like, I was this close to saying, oh, hell no.
What was the tea?
Baby, the ceiling was caving in.
Wow. That's how bad it was.
You seen Saw?
Yeah.
No exaggeration. The bathroom really? was like a scene from Saw.
And they were dead ass serious.
This spot right here, I'm going to tell you, Delta would walk in and be like, oh no, girl. I promise you would be out. You wouldn't do it.
Well, you know.
you ain't going to do this one. No,
I've
trust.
Said this before, and I think it's a character flaw in me, but my close friends will always say like, she'll leave. And because they've known me, they're like, where did she go? She got in her car and she drove home. Mm-hmm. Why? She just didn't do it. And I don't think I'm not flexing it. I know it's a character flaw in me.
Well, you know, with me personally, a lot of times, I mean, I've settled for the low end gigs because I'm in the city for something else.
Sure.
And every little thing that you do is going to promote that. So for me, I'll take those gigs. We're going to talk about it. But I usually, it's very rare for me to turn anything down, especially if I'm already in this city. Let me go down here. They only going to pay you $50. Girl, they paying Fantasia. Yeah, I'm going to get that $50.
Right.
Because while I'm there, let them know, hey, I'll be here tomorrow, so on and so forth. So, yeah.
I remember, do you remember when we did a fundraiser for Hunter at the Boom Boom Room? And we used to get ready, or we used to perform on the pool table. They would just put a board on it and we would go up and we would perform. And Boom Boom was so fun. It had its own, it was right on the beach and there was a...
Baby, but that tape, just the thought of knowing that we performed on, it was two pool tables put together with a board, on pool tables.
Yeah.
Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had that night, the nightclub was there, but then down the hill... You could get like a room if you wanted to, mm-hmm. and some of the girls that were fast and loose would be like, "Oh, I'm staying. I'm gonna get a little room." And we're like, "Okay, girl,
and do
chat.
Some other things."
She's very honest about it. It was a different time. Uh-huh. But I remember we were doing that fundraiser, and people were tipping, and all this money was going to our friend who was in the hospital at the time. And mm-hmm. I remember that one girl was sitting there, and she like got her foot, started kicking money under her chair. And she went under here and she took it, put it in her purse. And she got up and left. And we're up there. And I look at LaDonna and they were like, she's taking money. That girl's taking money. And LaDonna's like, oh. And we were like, that bitch just took the fucking donations. LaDonna flew off that thing. Now, you know, I wasn't going to jump off, but I was like, you better go. LaDonna jumped off and she ran down the fucking boulevard out the club in full drag. In LaDonna thigh-high boots. And, you know, she used to use the fake pussy and fake titties and shit. Just like that. And came back with that money. And the girl was like, oh, no, I was going to try to hang on to it for you. And, girl, people are a mess.
Oh, that, you know, this could be a whole topic of money and people taking money. And we can go on and on. I got 100 stories to talk about when it comes to that.
Do you remember Ripples when it used to be you have to do 4 numbers a night? Fuck.
We did that?
4 numbers.
We really did, didn't we?
We did. Do you remember some of the things I remember is that little tiny window where you would, the DJ, you would have to put the your music in that little tiny hole and the girls would have to pass it all the way down.
You're talking about the cassettes.
We would turn our music in with a cassette and put the and spin it with an eraser. One, right. Two. That's and my music's cued.
Okay.
We would have to have a basket. And I can remember going into CDs. I was like, what is that technology? Now, who would ever have a CD?
I could tell you a story long, long time ago. Oh, my goodness. It was in Phoenix, Arizona. This thing came in with an LP.
Stop it.
She came in with an LP. She was dressed as Diana Ross. I don't remember her name at all, but it was such a gag to me that she came in. And then this was during the time that we had cassettes, mm-hmm. but she came in with an album.
Okay.
And they asked her, what was she going to do? She said, she handed her an album. She said, I'm going to do cut two.
Cut two.
She said, cut two.
Cut two. You know what's funny that you say that is I can remember turning in cassettes, but I feel like back then, I wasn't really doing mixes. I was just doing like a song. So I would, you know, get that cassette, put them on the double deck, and we would record from one to the other, like on a boombox, right?
And you press pause to add the next song, but you had to turn it just a teeny weeny bit and then add the next song.
Would you make your mix?
I tried it once or twice.
For what?
Samantha Fox.
Naughty Girls Need Love Too.
Yes.
Yes.
And then it went into something else, and I just remember taking the eraser of a pencil to turn it, because when you stop it, it's going to like roll back a little bit. So you had to kind of turn it a little bit so that the mix would be spliced to perfection. I was better then with the cassettes than I am with technology that they have now.
Oh, I can't.
I don't know how to do mixes.
See, I do, but I think I have too much bootleg like software, and I always try to go online like video to MP3 and it pulls it and it's like you get two tries and that's it.
My son always goes off of me. You should know how to do this by now. You said, no,
well,
I don't.
That's what I have you for.
Exactly. Like you, yeah. You do hair. You're the I'm not good with hair.
That's
I can't
what I have
I'm
you
not
for.
You can't hire me to do no hair. You can hire me to make some clothes.
Right.
You can't hire me to make no mix.
Right.
Because I don't know how to do all that.
That's why we have
now I can
friends.
Make you a cassette.
I can make you a cassette. Let's take a break. We are back. Just, you know what? Shooting the shit with Fantasia about a little bit of everything. This picture, I know you remember because
hey,
you
man,
had...
Hey, man, slide me some skin.
This is Fantasia here, me here, and you had this commissioned as a gift for me.
Yes, I did. You know, me and you had this little thing where I would come into the dressing room and I'd lean my hand back like this and say, slide me some skin. And we used to always joke about that.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe that was your 21st birthday, perhaps.
I think so. Yeah, so like three years ago.
That was one of your 21st birthdays.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the type of person, I really try to be very, very thoughtful and create gifts that people are going to keep forever. And this is evident of that. That drawing was made by a very, very good friend of mine, an amazing artist in West Hollywood. His name is Dalton Ellis. Mm-hmm. And I gave him my image and I gave him your image. And I explained the whole slide me some skin situation. I said, I just want you to create something for me because I want to give it to Delta for her birthday. And when I saw the finished product, I was like, oh, she is going to gag.
Picture, it's in my drag room. It sits right there. It's just, it's so important to me because it does capture something that is expressly us, something that we do together. But also, I mean, I think Dalton did such a good job.
Oh, yes. He's amazing.
Images. He is so sickening. Look at your leg, by
the way. Come on, pumps.
Look at the pump.
That long, skinny leg.
Girl.
It don't look like that now.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Well, this is the part of the show where people write in letters. They call it Read Me Delta.
Read Me Delta!
Dear Delta and fantastic guest, my best friend is consistently extremely late to meet up with me. One time he was 45 minutes late to dinner, and just this past weekend, he was 25 minutes late to meet me for lunch. When he finally arrives, he just sits right down and starts to converse as if I hadn't been sitting there waiting for a very long time. No apology, no explanation, no anything. I've tried to casually say things like, should we start meeting up at a later time instead? He is sensitive and informed me that he doesn't like being the first one to arrive because it makes him anxious. Look, I'm totally fine with being the first to arrive, and I think waiting alone for 5 to 10 minutes is something I'm okay with. Like you, I hold the space for other people's quirks. But what I don't want to do is keep waiting by myself at a restaurant for sometimes 30 minutes. Can you help me? Sincerely, Very Pablo.
Very Pablo.
What do you think about people being late? 30 to
45. Baby, listen. Give your friend a half hour notice. Don't tell them the exact time. If you want to meet him at 9:30, you tell him we're going to meet at 9 o'clock.
That's good.
Let him get there. And be like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm a little late. And give him a kind of slightly taste of his own medicine, but you're still on time.
Right.
So give him, I would say a half hour. Now, this is a person that's obviously consistent with being late all the time. Hell, give him an hour.
Yeah, I love that.
Don't stress yourself out with knowing that if you see that this is a pattern, it's not going to change. Mm-hmm. It's time for you to change it. So if you want to meet at 9 o'clock, schedule it at 8.
Right. We all only have 24 hours in a day. And I'm just saying, maybe your friend was going to meet up and said, I really only have an hour for lunch. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're having it here is because I was also going to go run over here and go talk to this person and that person. So you do have to realize that, you know, when you do that, you are wasting someone else's time. And it's simple. You could just say, like, you know, if you reach out to one another and you're like, hey, I'm having a bit of a delay. No big deal. No big deal. I'll wait for you all day.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just a communication of a thing, like, there's life is happening. It happens to all of us. It's not that big of a deal. It's not an insult and it's not an intention upon wasting someone's time. But when you know that you're just saying like, well, I would be more comfortable if I came late. Oh, you better
show
quit.
Some accountability and just at least inform them, you know, give them some communication.
I mean, maybe you two are very close and we're very close. I know Fantasia and you know your friend, but your friend is telling you, oh, I didn't come because my car broke down. I didn't come because I couldn't find an Uber. I didn't come because of these things. I just came because I was anxious about coming to eat lunch. I mean, I hold the space. I know. We all
like
got problems.
Like you say, shit girl, please.
Shit girl, please. We all have problems. Greetings, Delta, an effervescent guest. I was born in 1998, possibly the last generation to not have an iPad in my hands from birth, but not far off. I find myself feeling what I call existential FOMO for the queer scene of the 80s and 90s. And of course, anybody listening, if you don't know what FOMO is, existential FOMO is fear of missing out, right? Like when someone goes to a party and you're like, oh, I should have gone. It's that fear of missing out. You have to go everywhere. So that's what they're saying. And so they have an existential FOMO for the queer scene of the 80s and 90s. At that time, though, I know it was such a deeply traumatic time with the way the government and public opinion sought to quietly destroy all that the queer community had. That being said, I want to know, what is your read on the queer youth of today? What are you satisfied or dissatisfied about in the present landscape for young LGBTQ+ folks? And perhaps most importantly, how can my generation better connect with yours and other queer elders? Much love, Very Ed. That's a big question. That's a great question, but it's a heavy question.
It's not so heavy to me because really? You're not missing out on anything because we're here.
Yeah.
You know, those that were there during that time are the ones that have paved the way and still remember those things that we share with you now.
And we're lucky because many of the people from our generation, and again, I don't feel like it's preaching, just saying there's a lot of people from our generation that didn't make it here. That didn't make it here for a lot of reasons. And we are standing on the shoulders of a lot of people who fucking died because the government refused to see them and refused to acknowledge them and were disgusted by them. And we're where we are now, it's still happening. It's still happening. And we can't say, well, you guys have new technology, so it's your job to do that. And we understand this from here. We have to do it together. We have to understand each other, see each other, but stop playing this thing where it's like, fighting these little battles with one another when we should mm-hmm. be focused on the war against us. You know, I can say all day long, and I feel like people do say all day long when they watch Drag Race or something and they quote people from Drag Race or they quote people from Paris is Burning and they're like, I know the experience because I watched it. And it's like, no, you don't.
No.
And just because I was on Drag Race doesn't mean that I understand the experience of the ballroom scene or trans people in the late 80s, early 90s happening in New York. I couldn't possibly know, but I can hold the space for it and say, it's your job to keep talking about it. Mm-hmm. Don't ever stop talking about it. It's so important.
So the short of it, he's not missing out on anything.
You are not missing out.
Nothing.
There's, you know what I say too, like in just a fun way. I do feel like because of apps,
mm-hmm.
people lose that sort of ability to walk up to somebody at a club and be like, hi, you know, my name's Steven. I saw you from across the bar and I just want to come say hi. I think you're really cute and or whatever it is. Because now you just get on the app and you're like, I need somebody over 6'3". You better not be over 210 at 6'3", because that's a football build to me. I want brown hair. How much you make? Da, 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 da. And then you set your phone down and you get your drink and you go, let me wait for it to click. And if it doesn't click, well, then I guess I'm going home. So I remember once upon a time before that, it was like you had to cruise.
Authentically.
You had to really be yourself. And that's why there was a time when you would say like, guess what I did last night, girl? After you left the bar, I ended up going home with that cowboy. Cowboy, that's not your type. It is now. I didn't know it was, but I had a good time. Or somebody else would say like, you know that little dancer guy? Dancer guy? You don't ever like guys like that. I know, but we were just talking and like, I had no idea. I think I fell in love.
Wow.
It was so different at that time, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I swear when my I hate saying when my friends are here, because I feel like everybody that comes here is a friend. But when it's somebody that I've known for so long and somebody who knows me.
Our friendship is like family, though.
It is. And that's why I say when it's somebody who knows me at my absolute worst, you know, somebody who's seen me respond to situations and go, wow, I never expected you to respond that way. I'm disappointed in you. I'm saddened by you. But when they know that and they've seen that, but they only champion my best, they would never go up to somebody and go, well, actually, what you should know about Delta is one time this happened and I was disappointed. They would never. I have friends that come here that know those things. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the people that I would cherish and always put on a pedestal, because they think, I know the real you. I know how you respond. I know what hurts your feelings that you say doesn't hurt your feelings. I get it. But I'm always going to keep you on a pedestal. It's like, I'm always going to keep those people on a pedestal. Like, it's just impeccable to me. You're impeccable to me. I love you.
And I love you more. Thank you.
This is sick. This is good. This is what gives me cred, is that I know people, not just people on TV. Fantasia knows what I do. Thank you so much for listening and watching Very Delta. Our show comes out every Monday. Subscribe to Mom Podcast YouTube channel and turn on the notifications so you never miss an episode. Search for Very Delta on your favorite podcast apps to listen to the audio-only version if you can't take all the beauty of the visual that we have today. You can also sign up for premium offerings on Mom Plus Gold by visiting Mom Podcast Plus, where you get weekly episodes of more Very Delta. Don't forget to send your questions to readmedelta@gmail.com. You can follow me on Instagram at DeltaWork. And where can people find you on social media?
On Instagram, you can find me under Simply Fantasia. And on Facebook, you can find me under Fantasia Fuddy Lewis.
Fantasia Fuddy Lewis. That's where you can find her. We will see you right here next week. And until then, keep things very Delta. Very Delta is produced by Moguls of Media, a.k.a. Mom. Hosted by Delta Work. Produced and edited by Doug Robertson. Technical direction by Margo Padilla. With original theme music by Will Pitts. Media and design support by Stone Cold. And set design by Eris Sevilla. Executive produced by Alaska, Willem, Big Dipper, Camille Stennis, and Joe Cilio. Recorded at Forever Dog Productions.
I only like ice cream cake.
Mom!
To listen to Very Delta ad-free, one day early, and to get access to more Very Delta and all of Mom Podcast's premium content, check out Mom Plus Gold at mompodcast.plus.